It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And welcome to the show. Tuesday morning, that global warming, Steve, it's 8 degrees when I drove into the parking lot this morning. So, whoo, a little global warming, huh?
Yes, I was drinking it in all the way. I had the window down.
So, great show plan for you today. We have in studio with us Matthew Durkin. Matthew, welcome to the show. You are running for DA out in Jefferson County.
Indeed. Thank you, Kim, for having me. My name is Matthew Durkin. I'm running for Jefferson County and Gilpin County District Attorney.
Okay. And how can people, what's your website? We'll get that out there several times.
Please go to Durkin4DA. That's DURKINFORDA.com to contribute and volunteer.
Great. So I've got some questions for you that we're going to talk about in the first and second segment. So
Excellent.
We'll get back to you. And then in studio, you know him, Jason McBride, Senior VP with Presidential Wealth Management. It is great to have you here, Jason.
Well, it's great to be here. And Matthew said he thought he knew me, too. And every time I meet a DA or a prosecutor, they always seem to say, "It seems you seem familiar to me." I think that's a bad sign.
I think there's a pattern here.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to jump into that. We had promised that with Jason in studio that was going to be humor and some nuggets of wisdom. So we'll talk about some things in the third and fourth segment with you, Jason. And you are a valued partner. You and Presidential Wealth Management of the show, as I think most all of you know, I am truly an entrepreneur. I purchase my time for both my radio shows. And so the reason that we're on the air is because we have valued partners like you, and I really appreciate it.
Well, we sure appreciate you too, Kim, very much. Thank you.
So it's great to have you here. So let's jump in here. As you know, we look at many of these issues as freedom versus force. Force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. You should be able to persuade them in the battle of ideas. And we have a lot of PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties that like to use force instead of freedom. And that is why we do this show, is because when people are free, and freedom, liberty, liberty is really the responsible exercise of freedom. So for every freedom, there is a corresponding duty and responsibility. It's not just this whole willy-nilly thing. There is responsibility in a free society and a civil society. And so that is why we do this show, is to talk about these important issues. As we jump into what we're going to be doing today, went to Benjamin Franklin for our quote for today. And he says, "Never leave that till tomorrow, which you can do to today." And Benjamin Franklin was an American. Okay, do you know this word, Steve? Okay, it's a test. Who knows what this word means? Benjamin Franklin was an American polymath. Does anybody know what that word means?
Ouch. I do not.
I do not.
Okay.
I defer.
It's a person of wide-ranging knowledge or learning. So Jason McBride is probably a polymath.
Yes, he's our local.
Don't say that I'm calling you any names. Okay?
Well, I think my knowledge is much more narrow than that. I'd say you and Steve are more polymathical than I am.
Thank you, Jason.
That's polymythical.
I don't see that word here. So here we go. Benjamin Franklin was an American polymath and one of the founding fathers of the United States. He was a leading writer, printer, political philosopher, politician, Freemason, postmaster, scientist, inventor, humorist, civic activist, statesman, and diplomat. As a scientist, he was a major figure in the American Enlightenment and the history of physics for his discoveries and theories regarding electricity. As an inventor, he's known for the lightning rod, bifocals. Did you know that, Steve, that he invented bifocals?
Yeah, I think I knew that one, yes.
Okay, the Franklin stove, among other inventions. And he founded many civic organizations, including the Library Company, Philadelphia's first fire department, and the University of Pennsylvania. He was a busy guy. He was a very busy guy.
And he had a state-of-the-art sense of humor for the day. You know, so I think he, when it comes to sense of humor in a noteworthy politician. He and Churchill were cut out of the same mold.
And Coolidge was pretty funny, too. He had a really dry sense of humor as well, Calvin Coolidge. So again, Benjamin Franklin said, never leave that till tomorrow, which you can do today. So for our funnies, you know, we've been talking with Jason McBride about retirement all last week. You had all those workshops. So I thought we're going to have some retirement funnies. How's that?
Okay.
Okay, Jason, are you ready?
I'm ready.
The question isn't what age I want to retire. It's at what income.
You know, that's a good one. I have a client named Tom. And every time he calls me, he says, can I retire yet? And I always say, you can retire whenever you want. It's just what quality of life do you want to have?
Okay. So it's kind of funny, kind of not. Huh?
Yeah, it's kind of true.
Steve, you look like you wanted to say something. Okay. Next one. Be nice to your kids. They're going to choose your nursing home. And number three, money isn't everything, but it sure keeps you in touch with your children. Okay.
No, I didn't want to say anything. I was enjoying the nugget of wisdom that you promised, and there it was.
There we go. Okay. Let's jump into our bill for today. I haven't said thank you. You know, gratitude is so important. So thank you to the team, to Steve and Patty and Zach and Keith and Charlie, and to you, our listeners. You are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. Go out there today. Strive for excellence. Take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. And so always want to be grateful for all that we have. I was grateful today on this global warming day where it's 8 degrees outside that I had a car that had been in the garage that I got to drive over here. I didn't have to stand out there on a train platform or at a bus stop. And thankful that I had heat and electricity. Just kind of thankful for all that stuff today. So, okay, jumping in here, this is, Patty had found this, Senate Bill 20. And as you know, SB, when you see SB, that's a Senate bill. It's coming out of the Senate. If you see HB, that's coming out of the House. And then it has the year. So it's SB 20-084. And it's concerning a prohibition against requiring employees to be vaccinated. And it says it prohibits an employer, including a licensed health facility, from taking adverse action against an employee or an applicant for employment based on the employee's or applicant's immunization status. The bill allows an aggrieved person to file a civil action for injunctive, affirmative, and equitable relief. Now, I think as many of you know, there's this kind of this whole vaccination conversation going on in America today. And there's a term, if somebody wants to possibly have more information about vaccinations, they've been termed as an anti-vaxxer and then pro-vaxxers. I think that's simplifying the issue too much. And as I look at this, Steve, on vaccinations, I think there's really kind of the past and the present and the future. So in the past, we typically would vaccinate against childhood diseases, and there wasn't really any force in that. I think that people felt that, hey, it's a good idea to vaccinate against polio, but we didn't really have force on that. So we have that idea that we eradicated a lot of these childhood illnesses, through vaccinations, and that was past. Present, we're starting to see force being used for vaccinations, maybe that people don't feel they need. One of them might be the HPV vaccination, which for a sexually transmitted virus. And people may say, you know, I don't think that my lifestyle, that's something that I need to do or that I really want to do, you know, for my young children. But we're starting to see force on this particular vaccine, and there apparently have been some adverse reactions to that. So as we look at this in the present, we may want to say, wait a minute, I would like more information. I don't think that I want to forcibly have something like that put into my body or my child's body. So that's present where we're kind of looking at that. And we're seeing in New York, the state of New York, there's legislation there that would force all seventh graders going into school, public school in New York, that they would have to be vaccinated with this particular vaccine. So that's where we start to see, hey, maybe there might be some questions on that. And then looking into the future, as we look at a lot of this legislation, there apparently could be bureaucrats or PBIs in the future that are not elected, not appointed, that would mandate or coerce people into having certain vaccinations that may not even be invented yet. And so I think we have to be really careful about the things that we require of people. So this particular piece of legislation is, I think, trying to go more to the freedom side of this, because we're seeing so much force, mandates, and coercion coming through on this vaccination issue. Steve, do you have any comments you'd like to make on that?
Well, it's been a long time since I had to, get a child ready to go into the public school system. But I think, if I remember correctly, one of those requirements was like MMR.
Right. Measles, mumps, and rubella.
And we all certainly know, I certainly bear the mark of my shoulder, my arm, of the polio vaccine. So we've seen great success in these areas of getting these things under control. And it emboldens us to keep moving forward. And then I think that's after a while where we say, this is where the force starts to appear on the horizon.
Well, and we can have things that are very good ideas initially. I think many times, you can look across the spectrum. And then what happens is you have PBIs that might get a hold of it that are, take it off to the races. And that is why we always have to look at each of these issues as freedom versus force. So this is not just as simple as pro-vax or anti-vax anymore. We have the past, we have the present, and looking into the future, we have to be very cautious about what we allow PBIs, the power that we allow for them in our lives.
Let's not forget the apples and oranges aspect of this. MMR for little kids coming into a group setting for the first time, that makes sense. But is it the same as the other one that you just mentioned,
The HPV.
The HPV one, because now that one is more of a choice of actions type of thing in older children, preteens, teens. That now becomes not so much as just sitting in a room with other kids. Now, obviously, that suggests a higher level of physical interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that's kind of apples and oranges now.
Well, and that's why I think that we have to be very careful. And so this subject is not just as simple as what we saw in the past, what's happening in the present and in the future. So we're going to continue to work on this. And again, if something's a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people. They should be able to be persuaded because it's a good idea instead of force. Jason, is there anything you want to say on this?
Well, I think you make a great point, Kim. The PBIs, as you refer to them, lately, their thought is, if we can't persuade, we'll try to persuade first, and if people don't agree with us, then we'll just force them anyway.
Mm-hmm. And you see that in so many different issues.
Right.
And so that is why we do the show, is to look at these issues, kick the tires on them so that you can get your brain around them. But before we go to break, it's an exciting time. The Avalanche are doing well. The Nuggets are doing well. And March Madness is right around the corner. And the place to watch all these games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't want to miss any of the action. Wednesday is Dine-In Wing Day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. They've got these great new roasted wings. My favorite is the boneless wings. And if you don't want to cook, you can drop by Hooters Restaurants and pick up dinner to take home. Or you can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door. Just go to my website. All my sponsors are there. You can click on that and get more information. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, Matthew Durkin is in studio. He is running for Jeffco and Gilpin DA. These are really important races. And we'll find out why it's so important and then talk about some of these issues in criminal justice. And so we'll be right back. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, also in studio. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. All of our show recaps are there, all of our podcasts. and all kinds of great information. So, Matthew Durkin, you are have thrown your hat in the ring to run for Jefferson and Gilpin County DA. And these are really, really important races. I'm not sure people understand quite how important they are. But why are you going through this, running for public office?
Well, thanks, Kim, for having me. It has just been an honor and a privilege to serve as a district attorney in my hometown. I was born and raised in Jefferson County, and I've spent most of my nearly 25 years as a prosecutor in Jefferson County. So I get into the race to fight for my home, fight for my community that I was born and raised and that I love.
Okay. So now the current DA is term limited, right? Is that how this is all happening or no?
Exactly. Yeah. My boss, Pete Weir, is term limited, and so it's an open seat. And so I'm currently a chief deputy district attorney in that office, and he supports me in taking over when he leaves office next year.
So obviously with all this experience, you know what you're doing.
Well, I've certainly worked my entire life protecting our community, so hopefully I've done a good job.
These are such important races. I remember that when Pete was running this last time around, that that there was all kinds of money coming into these DA races across the country from George Soros. I mean, how much money came into that race? Do you recall?
4 years ago, George Soros poured $1.4 million into the race against Mr. Weir, just 30 days before the ballots dropped. So 30 days in advance, $1.4 million against Pete Weir. And you're so right. The DA's races and the DA's offices, the work that they do really affects your life, your neighborhood, your community, really more than so many other political offices out there. And that's why George Soros is going around the country and has dropped over $20 million in DA's races all over the country to try to put in DAs who actually don't want to prosecute crime. And that's what we've seen in places like Philadelphia, mm-hmm. Chicago, and most recently in San Francisco.
And, you know, what we're seeing with the crime rates in those particular cities. And, you know, Matthew, I think that people sometimes take safe communities for granted. And what we're seeing with a lot of these policies is ultimately, I think we could see more and more crime in areas where people, if one of the first things is you have to be safe to be able to run your businesses and to be able to live your lives, get your kids to school. And I'm not sure that people in Jefferson County or Arapahoe County or Douglas County realize that this is starting to become more tenuous depending on who we elect as DAs.
Absolutely. Public safety is the most critical form of what we do as a government. Is that we protect individual rights, we protect individuals, we protect businesses and their ability to provide services for the community and support their families. And what we're seeing in those communities that I referenced in Philadelphia, their murder rate has skyrocketed. It was already big to begin with, and it's skyrocketed in just the 4 years since the Soros DA was implanted there. Obviously in Chicago, people are shot on a daily basis. And what we're seeing in San Francisco is obviously making a lot of news that people and businesses aren't even able to operate because they mm-hmm. can't get into the businesses because of all the crime that's in the streets.
So, and do each of those cities have a Soros DA?
Each of those has a Soros DA.
Okay, so is there a Soros DA that's, your opponent?
Well, there's a primary on the Democrat side, but the same person that George Soros supported 4 years ago is in the race, and we certainly expect that George Soros will be back.
Any idea on money right now? It's still a little early, isn't it?
Well, obviously, it is a little bit early, but obviously funds are critical. We need as many funds as possible because we need to get the message out to 435,000 voters in Jefferson County alone. And a couple more thousand in Gilpin County. So we need to get this message out that public safety matters.
It does matter.
And your DA matters.
Okay. So I bet we could anticipate there's going to be more and more money coming in as we get closer and closer to the election.
Absolutely.
So a couple of questions then. Well, first of all, I went to your website, and on your website you talked a little bit about criminal justice reform, and that seems to be something that's in the conversation across America. So what's your comments on that, Matthew Durkin?
Absolutely. we always need to be better. We need to be better in criminal justice, but we need to take on reforms that are well thought out and well reasoned. And the concern that we're having right now is that what we're doing is we're just eliminating crime in the sense that we're just eliminating the laws themselves.
So we're not eliminating crime. We're eliminating the, well, things that used to be a crime are no longer a crime. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. The best example thus far is basically decriminalization of drugs. We're not doing anybody any favors by decriminalizing drugs in the sense that we are basically promoting use and abuse and keeping people imprisoned in their own mind of addiction. And that is just not doing anybody any favors. And in criminal justice, we don't have the resources then to provide those services once they get involved in the system. So what they've done most recently is they basically made all of drug possession or most drug possession a misdemeanor. That's effective March 1. And the ramifications of that is just going to be profound. We've already seen in the last 5 years a massive increase in crime because of the decriminalization that happened just a few years ago. And rather than look at those statistics and understand that issue, they decriminalized it even more. So we're anticipating huge increase in crime.
Well, and you know what I find so just crazy in my mind is, you know, we had this whole thing about these safe injection sites. And, I cannot believe that government would pay for people to actually destroy themselves. That is so antithetical to me, to the American idea. I just can't even believe that, Matthew.
And the concern that I have is that I completely agree with you is that many of these reforms are actually hurting the people that those who are championing those reforms are seeking to supposedly help. But what I mean by that is when you promote drug use, when you promote drug abuse, you're promoting that person. And you're promoting that person being continued in their prison of addiction. And what addiction does is it destroys the individual. It affects families and communities forever. It prevents them from being able to hold jobs. And therefore, they turn to crime. And so there's a notion that drugs are a victimless crime.
They're
All crime is related to drugs. And the biggest victim is the offender and the addict themselves.
Okay, so two other questions. One of them is we're seeing legislation down at the under the Golden Dome about getting rid of private prisons, and one of the thoughts is that the radical activist PBIs that want to do that is they then want to, you know, decrease the number of beds that are available in prisons and putting those criminals out on the streets. Do you have any thoughts on that, Matthew?
Well, I certainly understand the argument that no one should profit off of incarceration. I certainly understand that argument. But there's certainly a practical effect of that. And we're seeing that practical effect already. Cheyenne Mountain Reentry Facility is a private prison. It's closing on March 7th. That currently houses 642 inmates. And those inmates have to go somewhere. They've been sentenced. They're offenders, some of them, I'm sure, violent offenders, since that's the biggest proportion of offenders in DOC. So there needs to be a place for them to go, and simply shutting that facility doesn't answer any questions. We only have three private facilities now, two in Colorado out of the 23 facilities, and we need a place for those folks to go. And by shutting it, the JBC, the Joint Budget Committee, has an analyst has called that basically a train wreck and a public safety nightmare.
You know, and so interesting to me, Jason McBride, on that, just the fact that somebody would make a profit, you know, seems to sometimes have a negative connotation. However, if they're doing a job well. And I actually think that it's a good idea many times to outsource government services, because I think many times you get better results because there's competition in those particular arenas. But there's, again, kind of the radical activist, if you're working and making a profit, then they seem to think that's a bad idea. I don't think I totally agree with that, Jason.
Well, what would be the point of any private business, prison, incarceration, or otherwise, if you're not making a profit to stay in business. Now, I do understand somewhat the other side. We've all heard the stories of the conspiracies and the racketeering and incarcerating people on purpose just to keep them in there and continue to make profits. But I think that's a much smaller problem than releasing a bunch of criminals onto the street that should be incarcerated.
Well, and if you have a DA that is doing the job that needs to be done regarding criminals, then you really are going to have some beds probably to put people into in that. One other question before we go to break, and this has been on this national level. Apparently, there's some legislation that is being proposed about bringing people, criminals that have been deported that are not citizens, about bringing them back into America. It's called New Way Forward. Have you had a chance to look at that at all, Matthew Durkin?
I haven't looked at the details of that legislation, but certainly that is that triggers other criminal justice issues. And the concern that we have as prosecutors is that when you bring folks who are into the country who have perhaps been offenders themselves, you're bringing that element into your communities. More concerning, however, is that when you're bringing folks into these communities without any resources, any jobs, any homes, any family resources, again, most of them are attached to some type of criminal element, most likely drug or even human trafficking. You're bringing that criminal element. They're going to come into the community, and the fear that we have is that they are going to continue to do what they've done, which is commit crimes. And so we have a crime wave that's happening in Colorado that's fueled by a drug addiction crisis. We can't afford any more crime in Colorado.
It doesn't seem like a good idea to import any additional crime.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so we're going to go to break. I did get a text message from Susan. She said private prisons set up the wrong incentives to sentence people. The government is in bed with business. And, you know, to that point, we do talk about that big business and big government like each other. So I don't think we'll continue on that discussion right now, but it certainly brings up emotions on both sides of the aisle on that. So thank you, Susan, for that text on that. Let's go to break. When we come back, I think, Matthew, let's just make sure that we've buttoned up everything that you want to say, and then Jason will jump over to you. Does that sound okay?
Sure.
So this is Kim Munson, Matthew Durkin, who is a candidate for Jefferson County and Gilpin County DA, is in studio, as well as Jason McBride, Senior VP with Presidential Wealth Management. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out the website, kimmunson.com. In studio with me is Matthew Durkin and Jason McBride. Matthew, I think just a few other little things to button up. Is there any other comments you wanted to make on any of the things we were talking about?
Yes, just real quick. I wanted to respond to the text that you received. And certainly I understand the concern that the motives that private prisons may set up. But we also have a very complicated criminal justice system, and there's a lot of moving pieces. And so what we've seen in August of 2019 is when the Denver City Council voted to defund private profit facilities. And the concern that was raised there is that they shut community corrections, and they left 500 people who are in community corrections in Denver without a place to be. And those community corrections facilities play a very important role on behalf of the offenders in the criminal justice system. They transition through those community corrections facilities out of prison, but they also are a community-based sentence that is an alternative to prison. And by shutting those private facilities down, they basically displace those 500 people to surrounding communities, again, to the disadvantage of the offender. And so once again, we have seen that, you know, supposed in good intentions really hurt the people that they were trying to help by leaving them without a community-based alternative.
Okay. Well, this is so important. This race is so important. And so, again, your website, Matthew?
Durkin4DA, that's DURKINFORDA.com.
Okay, and you'd appreciate a little $10, $20, $50, whatever. Everything helps, right?
Absolutely. We need as much help as we can to get our message out to hundreds of thousands of voters in Jefferson and Gilpin counties.
Okay, well, thank you for stepping up. Greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
Okay, let's jump over here to Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. It's always great to have you in studio. And, I have to say, Jason, the preparation that you take just for our phone calls every day, I know that you bring that to the table with your clients as well. And many times, you know, I'll get a text message from you that I know that you're up late working because you're preparing for the next morning. So I really appreciate all that you do.
Well, thank you, Kim. I want to make sure to bring quality content to your show. Even though I'm a sponsor advertiser, we want it to be enjoyable and valuable to your listeners.
Okay, so let's jump in here. You've put a lot of effort into what we're going to talk about today, and we've got this early year indicator guide. So tell us about that.
Well, there's several early year things that can happen with the market that might give us a little bit of a tip off how we might do for the rest of the year. And of course, nothing's perfect, but you know, we've put together this indicator guide with like five of the indicators people talk about early in the year, and I thought we'd kind of go through them and see which ones have any validity and which ones don't, to you know, give you an idea of what we might have in store for the rest of the year.
Okay. Let's jump into it.
That will be available, by the way. You can download your copy of this by going to Chicks Presidential. Not Chicks. I'm sorry. oldairpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. Download your early year indicator guide for more info on what we're going to talk about today.
Perfect.
Sorry about the faux pas.
No problem. No worries.
All right. So the first one, Kim, that I'll look at, it's just the first trading day of the year indicator. And I don't even know who came up with this one, to be quite frank with you. I think someone literally just pulled it out of the air and said, if the first day of the year is up, there's a better chance that the market's going to be up for the year because it sounded good.
Okay.
But there is no evidence supporting this going all the way back to 1950. I've done a big table, Kim. We don't have to go over all of it, but you know, the first day going back to 1950, it's been up 37 times. It's been down 33 times. So pretty close. And if we kind of exclude moves of less than 5% for the year, either way, out of the 37 times the first day was up, the market at the end of the year was up 22 times. And out of the 33 years that the first day was down, the market was up 20 times. So it's 59% of the time that indicator is right when the market is up the first day, but it's right, you know, 61% of the time on the down days. So really, there's not much of an argument to be made for this indicator. And if anything, the percentages actually lean slightly towards a day one drop being better for our year-end prosperity than a day one gain. So, Kim, the only usable data point I could dig up looking at this going all the way back to 1950 was if the first day of the year is up over 1%, then the odds of us having a large decline for the year are pretty slim.
Okay.
That was it. So other than that, I mean, I don't even know if I'm going to cover this one anymore because I think it's kind of just a waste of time,
okay,
to be quite frank with you. So the second one, and I'm kind of taking these in order of, you know, when they occur on the timeline. So the second one is what's called the Santa Claus Rally. And the old adage there is, they say, if Santa Claus should fail to call, the bears may come to Broad and Wall. So the Santa Claus Rally is this. If the market is up during the last five trading days of the year, plus the first two trading days of the next year. That doesn't mean it has to be up every one of those days. It's just, you know, over that seven-day period, was it a positive move?
Got
does
it.
That
okay.
make sense?
It does.
So that's called the Santa Claus rally. And the adage says if there is no rally, then we may see a bear market or a drop in stock prices sometime during the year. Excuse me, Kim. And honestly, this one's a signal to be more aware of in the years in which it doesn't happen, in the years which it does.
Okay.
So if it does happen, it really doesn't mean anything. But in the years when it doesn't happen, maybe your antenna come up a little bit more. So going back to 1969, we've had 12 instances where we failed to see that Santa rally occur. Two of those years, we had pretty massive bear markets mm-hmm. following. That was 2000 and 2008. Now, it's interesting. Both of those were, you know, pre-election years that were flowing into election years. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get the rally at the end of 1999. We didn't get it at the end of 2007, and both of the following years were really bad. And both of those were, you know, 2000 and 2008 were election years.
What happened this last time around? I know we talked about it.
We got the Santa Claus rally this time. Let me consult my table here. It was barely. I mean, it was just barely, Kim, for the 7 days for the Santa rally. The market was up 0.03%. So, but it was still positive.
Okay.
Now, you might say, well, is there any correlation to the market being up bigger over those 7 days or smaller? And I've tried to dig through and I don't find any.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter whether it's up a bunch or just up a little. We did get the Santa Claus rally this year.
Okay.
So there we go. You know, the other times that we didn't get it, we had strong three times the market just went up and we didn't even have a dip. Three times the market dipped, and if you bought it just right and got in cheap and then you rode the bounce, you did great. But if you'd have just stayed put, you'd have done fine too. Four times there isn't a lot that happened. So, you know, 83% of the time, even if you didn't get the Santa Claus rally, so 10 out of 12 years, you'd have been fine just ignoring it. So, you know, this one's okay. If you don't get it, I would say that maybe your antenna go up a little bit on the defense just to watch a little bit closer. You know, if you're already nervous, excuse me, about the market, maybe you pull your horns in a little
okay.
bit and just watch close. But I don't think this is one, if we don't get that rally, that it's time to panic and start changing things instantaneously.
Okay.
All right. Are we done with that one? Any questions?
So. Nope.
Okay.
But, yeah, I think it's interesting. We got that little rally. We're coming into election year, so that's fascinating. I think it's fascinating stuff to look at this.
Yeah. Well, and again, we got it this year, so it's really a non-event. I would say that one, you know, if you follow history, it's not helpful
okay. This
year because it happened. So let's look at this one. Now, this one is called the first five trading days indicator. And going all the way back to 1950, this one actually has some pretty good meat on the bone, as I like to say, Kim. So the saying on this one is if the market is up after the first 5 days of the year, the first five trading days, then we have a better chance of the market being up for the entire year. So what happened this year in 2020 is we were up 0.69% over the first 5 days. So we did have the market up during that time, which is good. Now, this is interesting, though. Going back to 1950, out of 44 years that we had an up day in the first 5 days, Kim, only four times did we have significant losses for the year after that.
Interesting.
So really what I would look at, again, kind of, you know, anything 5% or less, I don't care too much about. But looking at that, only four out of 44 times did the market end up falling into the end of the year significantly after the first 5 days were up. Well, percentage-wise, historically at least, that tells me you've got a 91% chance of not getting your rear end kicked if you stay long or if you buy after the first 5 days of the year.
Okay.
Now, I think that's pretty solid.
I think that is very solid.
So another question then is what happens if the first 5 days are down? Does that give you any kind of an indication that we're going to have a bad year? And not really. Only 38% of the time has the market been lower by year end when the first 5 days were down. So it's less than a coin flip. I like to say this one works really pretty good on the uppy, but it's not so good on, it's a little soft on the downy.
Okay.
Get the pun there?
I got it.
Downy, fabric softener. I thought you guys would just break out into laughter.
Oh, Steve is. He's just.
He's shaking his head. That was worse than one of your jokes, huh? Well, that's what he's saying, not me.
You know, the promo clearly said nuggets of wisdom.
You got to be here, Matthew. I mean, it doesn't matter what joke Kim tells. Steve just disses her all the time. he's just a grump. So
not true.
Curmudgeon.
Yeah, the curmudgeon. Do we want to head into the next one, Kim, or do you want to go to break?
Let's do one more and then we'll go to break.
Okay, that's fine. So number four is what's called the January barometer. And this one is the one that is most talked about. You'll hear this one talked about on the news at the end of January. And this one's pretty simple, too. It says if the market is up in January, that it usually ends up for the year as well. Well, you know, a whole month is a longer period of time than a day or 5 days. So, you know, I took the numbers on this a little further because I think the real question is if the market's up for January, well, then what happens between February and the end of the year, right? Because let's pretend, for example, let's say the market was up, had a huge up in January, is up 8%.
Okay.
But at the end of the year, it was only up 3%. Well, the raw barometer would say that it was right. Well, I say you can't act on it. You can't buy or sell until you get to the end of January and you know whether it was up or down, right?
Right.
You can't act till you have the info. So if the market, if you would have bought at the end of January when it was up 8%, and at the end of the year it was only up 3%, you still lost 5%.
Right.
So what I want to know is in the years that January was up, what happened between February and December?
Oh, good point.
How much money could you have made or lost after you had the info to make your decision?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of wonky, but in any case, again, if we go back to 1950, I mean, so we got almost 70 years worth of data here. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm kind of leaving out the less than 5%, but 39 out of 43 times that January was up, that's, again, 91% of the time, you know, you had either decent gains or only moderate losses between the end of January and year end. So 91% of the time, that's exactly the same as the first five trading days indicator. I think that's a pretty good batting average. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that mean if January's up, you go and mortgage your house and no, I don't think so, but you might say, okay, January was up. Maybe the market has a better chance of being up between now and the end of the year. So maybe you don't have to change your investment allocation. Maybe if you're invested somewhat aggressively, you don't need to pull back a little bit.
So what happened this January?
Well, this January, let's take a look here. Now you're making me work.
If I'm looking at it the right, I think it was down.
Yeah, we're down, actually. So this January, we did not get the rally. The market was down 0.16% for January. So the next question is, well, what does that mean? What if January has been down, you know, over the month of January? So really, again, Kim, this thing doesn't give you a whole lot of good info when January is down. So only 44% of the time, going back to 1950, if the month of January was down, Did you see the market experience significant losses between January and the end of the year?
Okay.
So it's still less than a coin flip.
Okay.
Now, I'd rather see it up than down.
Right.
But I don't think it being down is really a reason for huge concern. So, again, this is another one that kind of works on one side of the coin but not the other.
Okay.
Okay.
Fascinating stuff. And you can actually get this report if you go to airpresidential.com, or you can go to my website and just click on my sponsors. But you can get this whole report, which people, I think, that like to look at different numbers. I mean, it's just kind of – it's fascinating stuff. So Jason McBride, Senior VP with Presidential Wealth Management. Let's go to break.
Okay.
And we have Matthew Durkin, who is candidate for – Jefferson and Gilpin County DA in studio. Are you learning anything on this, Matthew?
I'm loving all of this. I'm going to invest right now.
Okay. Well, we've got the guy here for you. So, hey, let's go to break. We'll be right back. This is Kim Munson.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
There is no verse to this song.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Check out my website, kimmunson.com. All of our show recaps and podcasts are there. And go to my website and click on sponsors and click on Presidential Wealth Management. And it takes you to where you can get this whole report that Jason is giving us. And it just cracks me up. You've got this, get your copy of the early year indicator. And then the picture that you have there is this whole crystal ball thing. It's so creative. It cracks me up. So be sure and sign up for that. And of course, you have this podcast that you did on that Secure Act as well regarding, some of the changes in retirement? Is that what it is?
It was a mixed bag of changing regulations on IRAs, retirement, 529s, all kinds of different little things. It's actually a very good podcast, very informative, if I do say so myself.
Okay. Well,
and I do.
Yeah, and go to airpresidential.com or my website. You can find all that. So, okay, Jason, we've gone through all these indicators. There's one more that I'm sure is the most scientific, and that is the Super Bowl indicator.
That's right. That's right. So the Super Bowl indicator says this. If the NFC wins the Super Bowl, it's better for the market than when the AFC wins the Super Bowl. So you're right, Kim. Is there any connection between the winner of a football game and the Dow Jones? I can't think of any, so this one should at least take home the coincidence prize,
okay,
if nothing else. But, you know, what's funny is the numbers actually do show a difference.
Do they really?
Coincidence or not. So, again, if we go back all the way to 1967 of the first Super Bowl, the market has been up 81% of the time when the NFC wins, but it's only been up 61% of the time when the AFC wins. So in this year, the Chiefs won, which I'm very happy about.
Me too.
But we'll see if it affects the market. Now, even something as simple as this, you've always got some eggheads out there, statisticians, that have to try to make it difficult.
Okay.
So there's those out there that say, now, wait. That's not right, because they say that the Steelers, the Colts, and the Ravens, who are in the AFC, should be counted as NFC because that's where they were when they started out.
Oh.
Now, the numbers I just gave you don't include
that.
But if we did reflect that, it's even more powerful because it adds 9 wins to the NFC column and 9 losses to the AFC column. And so the percentages that way would be the market's up 86% of the time when the NFC or a team that was originally NFC wins, and only 41% of the time when the AFC wins.
Well, I got to think, since it's been about 50 years since the Chiefs have won the Super Bowl, I'm taking that as a positive. I'm throwing that out the window. Is that okay?
Well, you know, you can, at your caution. I mean, it is kind of funny. Really, this is the stupidest indicator out of all five of them, but the accuracy is not bad. So, you know, fight it if you want, but it seems to work. So,
well, we'll talk about this after next year's Super Bowl. How's that?
Well, we'll talk about it at the end of the year. We'll do an update.
That sounds great. So get this report. It's just pretty darn fun. So go to airpresidential.com and you can find it there. So we've got a little bit more time.
Yeah. Well, I got one more thing.
You do?
I just got to give you a little hard time, Kim. Okay. You know, the Patriots won the Super Bowl last year, and then the market was up 22%. So it better be up more than that this year after the Chiefs won, or else I'm going to hold you responsible.
Okay.
And all Chiefs fans.
That's a heavy burden to bear there.
It is a very heavy burden to bear. So, so Matthew Durkin, who is a candidate for DA, and this is so important, such an important race. Jason, you said you had a couple of questions for
Matthew. Well, a couple of things popped up while Matt was talking, and maybe you don't, Matt, but you talked about the Soros money coming in 4 years ago. Your boss still ended up winning the race, but was there any polling or any measure of once that money came in of what effect it had? Did it have an effect to make the race much tighter, much closer, or did it really not do much?
Well, we don't have any polling data to understand exactly the effect that it had here in Jefferson County. And in that money 4 years ago was one of the first DA's races that George Soros participated in. My boss was only one of, I think, two DAs amongst about seven races at that time that was able to beat back George Soros. So that was very, very impressive. And he did that through just a lot of hard work. Yeah, a lot of hard work. A lot of folks came out. Governor Ritter came out for my boss. The concern that we have is that George Soros just has not gone away. He has become more active than ever. And as I indicated earlier, he has spent over $20 million across the country trying to affect these DA's races. And think about it for just a second, kind of from a financial perspective, is that he's able to invest millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars into one position, into one man or woman who he puts into place to not prosecute crimes. I mean, talk about bang for your buck. Rather than dedicating millions of dollars to 100 legislators here in Colorado, he can affect crime and policy just by the wave of a check into one community.
Well, I would think one, I guess, good thing about his known involvement in many of these races is, you know, we've got several years now to see the results of what he's done, as examples you gave, Philadelphia, San Francisco. I don't know if he was involved in Chicago, but you gave that an example. So, you know, the proof's in the pudding. You know, he put these people in, spent the money, and here's the results you get. So I think a lot of places across the country, including Jeffco and your race, you've got all kinds of fodder and ammunition to use against him, not in the literal sense,
right?
Figuratively.
Well, I mean, that's a great point. And it's just about getting that awareness out there. And as I go out and I talk to communities, community groups, I talk about some of these issues and the rising crime, 28% increase in homicides, 20% increase in violent crime, huge increase, almost 100% increase in every one of our cities in Jefferson County in motor vehicle theft, which is basically the currency of drug addiction, because you don't have anything to do but take other people's things if you can't support yourself. And as I go out into the community, people come up to me everywhere I go, and they say, "You have said what I feel, or what I've seen on Next Door, or what I've seen in my neighborhood, mm-hmm. that there's burglaries are up, or robberies are up, or, you know, car thefts or break-ins are up." And that's the exact point. It's just developing the awareness that crime is up here, and that the solution is not to just wave it away or write it away and turning our communities over to greater criminal elements.
Well, well said. And, you know, I see these signs that say, you know, fight crime, lock your car, which I get that. But actually, fighting crime, it'd be nice if we didn't have to lock our car. So, Matthew Durkin, it's so great to have you in studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And that is Durkin4DA.com, right?
Please go to Durkin4DA.com. Okay. We can use all the help we can get.
D-U-R-K-I-N.
You got it.
All right.
Jason McBride, always great to have you here.
Well, great to be here. It's nice to meet you, Matt.
Good to meet you.
I hope I don't meet you later on.
Our quote for today, don't be burglarizing any cars, okay?
Right.
So Benjamin Franklin said, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.